You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Bolivia is rich in energy and mineral resources, but historically poor in economic and social equality. That started to change with the election of Evo Morales, an openly indigenous president of the country, in late 2005. His popularity was reconfirmed last month by over two-thirds of voters wanting to keep him in power in a recall referendum. However, an elite minority desperately want him out and brought the country to a crisis state in the past few weeks. We've invited Adriana Paz to provide some background to the crisis and analyze the current situation. Adriana Paz is a Vancouver-based Bolivian activist, journalist, and member of the Canada-Bolivia Solidarity Committee. Good morning, Adriana.
Good morning, Peter.
So what changes has Evo Morales been implementing since he's been president?
One of the main changes that Evo and his government has carried on in the last 3 years that they are in the presidency, I think it's been the writing a new constitution. That has been, I think, the major achievement and one of the most difficult ones, because in the constitution, as the social movements call, there was the opportunity to break with the colonial past and the colonial legacy of the Bolivian state. So in the constitution, it's the scenario where all the social movements had the possibility to participate and to redefine the new basis for the new state. In the constitution, for example, nationalization, it's one of the main points where natural resources and key industries are being nationalized and are declared a property of the Bolivian state. So in other words, it's reasserting national sovereignty and it's reasserting a historical demand of the social movement, especially the poorest one. Also in the constitution, it is highlighted a new agrarian reform. This is a very delicate point for Evo Morales' opponents, because in the eastern part of the country, there are many landowners that own the majority of the territory in Bolivia. It's a very delicate issue, especially for the elites, because Bolivia is known for the very unequal distribution of the land. Only to mention, as an example, that 70% of the land in Bolivia belong to 5% of the population in Bolivia. So this is a delicate issue. And along with the agrarian reform, there are also another key important decisions to nationalize industries like telecommunications, gas and oil, water, and so on.
Who are the groups that are opposing these changes to increase national sovereignty?
Yeah, the right wing in Bolivia, we will define for the people from the all traditional political parties that now they found a way to place themselves into the provincial governments, but also all the new and establishment the old oligarchy of Bolivia, that are the landowners, are the business elite, that they are part of the so-called civic committees, that are civil society associations made up only by business elites and white high economic social classes. So we talk the elite that is spread into these two institutions, one civil society institution and the provincial government.
So now we're always hearing about opposition being based in the eastern provinces. Can you give some explanation of why that opposition is based there?
Yeah. A bit of background of context, geographical context. Bolivia, we can divide in eastern and western. The western part of Bolivia is the poorest one, and it belongs to the highlands where all the mine are and the majority of indigenous population. Whereas the eastern part are the lowlands. It's closer to Paraguay and Brazil. and there is a lot of territory good for agriculture and for cattle. So now there is also a discovery of gas and oil on the south. In that region, in the lowlands, the population of the indigenous population is only 17%. So there are more landowners, and many of these landowners are descendants of Nazis that went to Bolivia, running away from the Holocaust, and or people from the Balkans, and so they are European descendants that went to Bolivia and started to acquire big amounts of land in an illicit way. So that part of the country has been very prosperous always because the geography, because they are rich in natural resources, and as I said, cattle and good land for agriculture.
So what are the key issues and demands of this opposition then?
Well, I think the key issues is that the Morales government is committed to include the participation of all the marginalized and excluded ones in Bolivia. I mean, peasants and indigenous. The second thing is they are opposed to the constitution, the new constitution, because it's touching the interests, the central and important interests from them. And another demand for them is autonomy for the provinces. However, with the demand for autonomy, we have to be very careful because in the constitution it is included the autonomic demand, but autonomy also not only for the provincial governments, but for the municipal governments and for the indigenous governments or indigenous communities. This type of autonomy is a kind of autonomy that the oligarchy don't want to support. Their version or the demand of autonomy, it's only giving more power for the provincial governments because right now they are in the founded place there. So the autonomic demand, I think it's one of the main ones for them, and the rest, there are other very minor several demands that are just a way of finding an excuse and pretext to provoke all the violence and all the mobilizations, but I think I will leave it with autonomy demand.
Yes, you mention about provoking violence. So what actions and strategies have they actually used to challenge Morales?
Yeah, as you mentioned in your introduction, after August 10th, when the results of the recall referendum were clearly showing that the two-thirds of the population in Bolivia is supporting Evo Morales changes, the opposition they in some way had to show that there is opposition, and so they started in five of the provinces with several actions and demonstrations in opposition to Morales. The first type of mobilization that they made is to take over the estate in buildings and state institutions there. So they took over, but in a very violent way. They went and destroyed the buildings, they destroyed the computers, they burned out the buildings. So there was, and the situation suddenly was out of control. The so-called opposition, they were able to organize and to pay people that will go and act as a mobs with the sticks and with gangs in the streets, and they will beaten up, especially in the cities of the opposition. They will beaten up to anyone that is pro-Morales government and anyone that will show indigenous features in their faces or dark skin. So there was a confrontation, a civil confrontation, because on the other hand, Morales supporters and peasants and indigenous, they had to defend themselves because the level of violence was really exceeding. And it reached peak, the violence in province in the north, in the province called Pando, where 30 people has been killed, between 30 people and 40 people has been killed, more than 100 people wounded, and close to 100 that it's disappeared because it's border with Brazil. So many people it's disappeared in the jungle. That is when Evo Morales has been trying to not send the army and to the police, to not repress the people. But with this level of conflict, Evo Morales has declared martial law in that state, and they were able to control and to contain the violence. And finally, the governor of this department or this province has been arrested as one of the main responsible for this massacre.
So it sounds like a very, very careful strategy on the part of Morales. And so what's that led to? What's the current situation now in the country?
After these sad events, violent events, Evo Morales' government has declared the U.S. ambassador as a non grata person, or in other words, as ask him to leave, because all these actions by violent actions organized by the opposition has been not just casualty or some spontaneous social uprising. This is part of a strategy that's been carefully planned with close support from the U.S. ambassador Philip Goldberg. So one of the actions that the Bolivian government did, it's first to be really careful and not sending the army or the police to repress. They were there to prevent or to defend the people, but not really acting in a repressive way. The second thing is to expel the ambassador from Bolivia, the U.S. ambassador from Bolivia, and it was expected also that Washington also has expelled the Bolivian ambassador from the United States. Meanwhile, also in Venezuela, there was a similar situation where Hugo Chavez also has discovered an attempt to coup d'etat. And so it proceeded in the same way, expelling the U.S. ambassador from Venezuela, and also Washington expelled the Venezuelan ambassador from the U.S. So this problem that started with a national issue has become an international problem because the interference from the United States was very clear. I mean, there was a clear attempt to a social coup d'etat to Morales' government and also then to the Venezuelan government. The situation is there is a fragile dialogue that started 2 days ago. People there in Bolivia, they don't think that they are going to agree or to reach a agreement. But Bolivia is going to be on the edge of a civil war, like many media and internet has been speculating. I think that Evo Morales is very committed to democracy, to preserve democracy, and I believe that there is room to negotiate the autonomic and the constitutional agenda. However, as I said, right now it's the dialogue. It's very fragile and weak.
But he's got extraordinary support from other South American countries, yeah?
That's right, and that's all the South American countries has expressed their support, and they also had an extraordinary meeting, all the South American countries, to figure out a way to help Bolivia and to assist as a negotiator and mediator on this crisis. And in that sense, the U.S. is isolating itself because didn't give a word about the fact that all the countries in South America had an extraordinary an emergency meeting. But instead, what they done and said in the corporate media is that Bolivia, Burma, and Venezuela have failed aggressively, have helped tremendously to fight against Iraq. So they are denying the fact that more than five countries in Latin America are giving the support to the democratically elected for government of Evo Morales.
So how can listeners show their support for the people and the democratic elected government of Bolivia?
Well, today there is a demonstration at the U.S. consulate at 4 p.m. The address is 1095 West Pender. There is going to be a demonstration in support of the Venezuelan and the Bolivian government, but it goes beyond, because I think it is also a way to support Bolivia and Venezuela, but also it's a way to say that the Latin American countries will have the right of self-determination and to govern ourselves without U.S. imperialist intervention. Another good way to support, if you cannot make it to the protest, is to be go to web pages where there are many petitions circulating online. For example, Bolivia Rising website is a very good one where you can find many links and all sorts of information.
Thanks very much for taking the time to talk with me. Much appreciate it.
Thank you, Peter.
I've been talking with Adriana Paz. Adriana Paz is a Vancouver-based Bolivian activist, journalist, and member of the Canada-Bolivia Solidarity Committee. And as you heard, 4 p.m. today, outside the U.S. consulate, 1095 West Pender.